In the early and mid-1990s, I earned a reputation in the Unitarian Universalist Association as one of the most outspoken proponents of individual freedom. I won an award for a sermon on the subject and preached that award at a General Assembly, the annual gathering of American Unitarian Universalists. I served as president of Unitarian Universalists for Freedom of Conscience. And most notably, I engaged in a brief but intense debate about the limits of freedom with another minister in a monthly periodical widely subscribed to by ministers. When I Googled myself shortly after the invention of Google, another colleague's sermon attacking me popped up prominently. Basically, he accused me of making a false idol of freedom. How can this be, I wondered. Isn't freedom to construct one's own belief the hallmark of our creed-less tradition? Well, in recent years, I have hinted at something that I want to make explicit today. I was wrong. Wrong, wrong, wrong. So today, I'm coming clean about this. And at its heart, my mistake had to do with a profound misunderstanding of freedom. I confused freedom with individual license. I believed that because of the primacy of individual freedom of conscience, each Unitarian Universalist has a categorical, absolute right to come to his or her own beliefs and understandings and actions in the world. Really? So does this mean that I have a right as a Unitarian Universalist to believe in white supremacy? Do I have a right as a Unitarian Universalist to believe that I have no responsibility to care for others who might be suffering or impoverished or discriminated against? Do I have a right as a Unitarian Universalist to believe something that is completely contrary to our historical tradition, say that it's really not this world that matters, it's the afterlife that counts? Well, in the 1990s, I actually would have answered yes to those questions. Okay, not the white supremacist question. But I acknowledge that there was some outer limit of what's acceptable as a Unitarian Universalist, but then I said that this outer limit is very, very far out, so far out that it's almost meaningless. So basically, aside from this very rare kind of exception, I would have subscribed to the simple understanding articulated by many Unitarian Universalists these past 20, 30, 40 years, including people here, that in our faith, you can believe anything you want. Ours is an anything-goes faith. Well, what I was advocating for was license, not freedom. My colleague Michael Schuller down at the First Unitarian Society in Madison defines license as tolerating no restriction, demanding absolute autonomy. License, according to Schuller, says that no matter that my belief is ill-founded, irrational, or pernicious, it is my categorical right as a Unitarian Universalist to claim it. And looking back, what I would say is that more than anything else, my mistaken understanding of freedom opens the door for our faith to be a faith of narcissism. It's all about you. It's all about what you believe, what works for you. Reason, critical thinking, the common good, don't worry about these things. As long as what you believe works for you, is good for you, then everything's cool. So what I would say now is that true freedom actually has constraints, has limitations within it. Balance is important to this concept of freedom. Of course, freedom includes individual autonomy. But this individual autonomy is not absolute. It is not a categorical right. Individual autonomy must be balanced by the common good. And in the context of our faith, individual autonomy must be balanced by the tradition of our faith. This is not to say that tradition trumps individual autonomy. It doesn't. But it's something to consider, to balance. Well, I was thinking about all this week with the Supreme Court decision, the McCutcheon decision that was passed down this week. I was thinking about this idea of freedom as a balancing act between individual autonomy and the common good. Now, the McCutcheon decision, if you missed it, struck down any limit on the total an individual can contribute to candidates during a single election cycle. Now, if freedom means individual autonomy, license, then the Supreme Court majority absolutely made the right decision. Giving money to candidates you endorse is an expression of free speech. Placing a limit on what you can give then is a constraint to this right. But what the Supreme Court failed to do is balance individual autonomy with the common good. Unlimited, unregulated money flooding our political system does tremendous harm to the common good. It puts enormous power into the hands of a super wealthy people, very few of them, who can arguably buy elections and elected leaders. Now, in recent weeks, Americans have talked about oligarchy in disparaging ways to describe Russia today, with Vladimir Putin and this cadre of super wealthy business leaders who run that country, who are calling the shots, and oh, by the way, squelching individual autonomy. My dictionary defines oligarchy as a form of government in which all power is vested in a few persons or in a dominant class or clique, government by the few. Well, that is exactly the kind of government the Supreme Court majority made more likely in our country with the McCutcheon decision, as well as the earlier Citizens United decision. With these rulings, the Koch brothers or George Soros can have way more say in who gets elected and what laws are passed and what regulations are passed than you or me. And then throwing up our hands and saying, what's the use of being involved? Further propels us down this road of low investment in the process by those of us who are not super rich and declining election turnout. I just don't see any way you can look at these Supreme Court decisions and say that they're conducive to the common good. And I want to lift up that this common good idea is not something foreign to the creation of our country and our Constitution. The concept of the common good was very much a part of the founding principles, even though they neither completely embraced it nor completely understood it. Exhibit A, to say that, is slavery. The Constitution, as it was originally adopted, preserved slavery. So how do we balance individual autonomy with the common good? That's not an easy question. Not an easy question to answer. Tension between the two is implicitly part of the equation of freedom. And we can err too far in one direction or in the other. And to me, the Citizens United and the McCutcheon decisions are examples of erring too much on the side of individual autonomy. So in this McCutcheon decision this week, Chief Justice John Roberts wrote, "If the First Amendment protects flag burning, funeral protests, and Nazi parades, despite the profound offense such spectacles cause, it surely protects political campaign speech despite popular opposition." Well, I would actually argue that flag burning, funeral protests, even those horrible, horrible protests perpetrated by the late Fred Phelps and his church, even Nazi parades, are less injurious to the common good than flooding our system with unregulated dollars. Phelps picketing Matthew Shepard's funeral with incredibly offensive and hurtful signs was outrageous, but it was not a threat to the core of our democracy. So I would actually allow flag burning. I would allow funeral protests from a respectful distance, and I would allow Nazi parades. But I would not allow unlimited campaign contributions. To me, allowing the former and not allowing the latter stakes out a good balance point between individual autonomy and the common good. Well, the same tension exists within Unitarian Universalist congregations, this balancing of individual autonomy and the common good. My colleague Peter Bellotta wrote in a blog a few years ago, "There is a contradiction inherent in liberal religion. We are free, autonomous individuals in community with one another. Tension exists between freedom and connection, autonomy and community. There's no getting around it. Our calling is to live gracefully in that tension, holding them with equanimity, without being weighted as we are now toward individual freedom and autonomy. Our capacity, he goes on, for being a transformative presence in the world is diminished when we neglect the communal, connected, covenanted aspect of our life together, and when we focus primarily on the individual and their freedom. Our institutions suffer. So here at our fellowship, we uphold this idea of balancing individual autonomy and our common good in our principles for a healthy congregation. This is the statement that our fellowship adopted that describes how we aspire to interact with one another in this beloved community. One of the principles lifted up in the statement says that we strive to keep our individual needs in balance with the health and vitality of the whole community. This explicitly says that we aspire to find that balance point between individual autonomy and the good of the whole. This statement lifts up that none of us has a categorical, none of us has an absolute right to believe, to say, to do whatever we want here. If what we believe, say, or do causes significant harm to the common good of the fellowship, then it's not allowed. Anything goes is not the spirit of this fellowship. None of us has the categorical right to do something harmful to others because, well, we just feel like doing it. Balancing our individual needs with the health and the vitality of the community as a whole, this is the spirit of the fellowship. And I have also come to believe that in the context of spiritual community, we need to balance the tradition of our faith with individual autonomy. We are not completely bound by tradition. In fact, to say we are would be contrary to our tradition. It's never been about being bound to tradition. But we have to take into account our tradition. If we believe that it's the afterlife that matters and not this world, if we say that some people are saved or some people are condemned to hell in this life or the afterlife, if our actions show a complete disregard for the care of the earth, these things are so contrary to our tradition that I think you could argue they're out of bounds here. It's not to say that you can't believe or say or do these things as a human being. You can. But in my view, saying or believing or doing these things which are fundamentally out of our tradition, that's incompatible with being a Unitarian Universalist. Well, I want to suggest an additional question to ponder this month as we explore this idea of freedom. What are you going to do with this precious gift of freedom? What are you going to use it for? And if your answer is all or mostly about what benefits you, then I challenge you to balance that focus on self with a focus on community, on the common good. Is Unitarian Universalism skewed toward individual autonomy and away from the common good in the 20th century? Our faith did become increasingly characterized by narcissism. Peter Balaga, in that same blog I quoted from earlier, lifts up that we managed somehow to institutionalize narcissism, which is actually a pretty amazing accomplishment. This skewing reached its zenith in a marketing campaign in the 1990s by the Unitarian Universalist Association that lifted up Unitarian Universalism as a religion that puts its faith in you. Maybe we should have made the motto then, Unitarian Universalism, putting the I back in religion. Is that really what we want to be? Really? This impacts our understanding of the minister's role in the congregation. Peter Balada tells the story of a workshop of a congregation that had just called a new minister. And so the workshop was with the minister and the congregation figuring out what's the relationship going to be. So the facilitator of this workshop asked the members of the congregation, what is the minister's primary job? Somebody answered, to make us happy. Someone else answered, to serve our needs. The facilitator replied, guess what? The minister's job is not to make you happy, not to meet your needs, but to serve the mission of the church. Peter Bielodek writes, there was a sharp intake of breath in the room. That moment was such a shock of recognition that the people who are there remember it still. It's not all about me. It's not all about my needs. I think we would do well to consider this over these next 6 weeks or so as we collectively contemplate this question of calling Leah Hart Landsberg as our associate minister. The question that each one of us must ask ourselves is not whether Leah's ministry makes us individually happy or meets our individual needs, but whether Leah serves the mission of the fellowship. And so I want to conclude today by talking a little bit about the fellowship's mission, which we say at every service so that maybe we can remember it. That mission of welcoming everyone, growing in mind and spirit, leading in social justice. My colleague Leah has helped me understand that these three legs of our mission are really thoroughly, thoroughly interrelated. Welcoming newcomers into the fellowship helps the rest of us grow in mind and spirit because we hear new ideas, new perspectives. Growing in mind and spirit helps us be more welcoming in turn. The radical inclusion of truly welcoming others helps us be leaders in our increasingly multicultural, diverse community. So does growing in mind and spirit. Leading in social justice helps us grow in mind and spirit. You see all the connections. It's all mutually reinforcing. And our mission, then, is not just about meeting individual needs. It's not all about you or me as an individual. Welcoming everyone obviously calls us beyond ourselves, right? This piece of our mission has beckoned us forward to change the fellowship so it can still be welcoming, maybe even though we like the fellowship exactly the way it is today. Growing in mind and spirit isn't just about you and me growing as an individual. It's also about you and me helping each other grow. And leading in social justice is not about patting ourselves on the back because we're doing good or, hey, this is going to be a good marketing campaign. We're doing good. People will like that. It's about doing our part, fulfilling our responsibility to help build a better world. And so may we embrace the tension implicit in freedom. May we balance individual autonomy, individual needs with the common good. May we live gracefully. May we live creatively in this tension.